Hey everybody, it's Bree.
And Lainey, welcome. We have the Catlin Tucker with us today. I'm super excited. I'm going to let her introduce herself a little bit more, but educator, best-selling author, podcaster, international trainer, keynote speaker, fill in the blanks, Catlin. What did I not say? Because you're amazing and you're doing so much stuff. And I want to make sure everyone knows all the things you're putting out there.
I mean, I think you covered a lot of them. And then just being a mom of two kids, learning at home every single day.
That is an important perspective. And that's one that Bree and I have definitely, that was actually what started this podcast, was us trying to figure this all out because this is a bit crazy right now. So speaking of that, why don't you tell us a little bit about, we like to say with our lemonade, our sweet and our sour, whatever order you want, what's sweet and what's sour in your life right now?
Well, I think the sweet for me is I've spent the last 10 plus years trying to convince people that blended learning was worth their time and energy. And I don't think I'm going to have to do that anymore. People realize that if there is any constant in education right now, it is change, and they're much more open to blended learning, online learning, strategies using technology, hopefully to put students at the center of learning. So that's exciting, even though this moment is very tough. And I think my sour is just trying to find my own rhythm and balance as a working mom at home with an 11 and a 13-year-old who are doing online learning. And my 13-year-old's like a Hermione Granger. You could plop her anywhere and she's going to do amazingly well. And my 11-year-old is struggling, just trying to figure out the workflow online. And I feel bad for him. It's a lot to juggle. And so as a mom, I'm really tapping into my patience tool, and I wish I had more of it. But so that for me right now is just the toughest thing I'm dealing with.
Say, I mean, that honestly, as everybody that's listening has, that if you've listened to us from the beginning, you know that that was the same issue for Lainey and I that brought us together. And one of the things that is interesting for the three of us is that, you know, bringing all of that in as well as working full time and trying to, you know, keep everything at bay. And, you know, I think everybody has gotten really accustomed to unannounced people walking into sessions and just saying hello and just, you know, keep forward with it, because it just seems to be something that's happening everywhere. Like even right now, my sweet little town has decided to do construction right outside my office right now. So I'm going to be hoping that I'm going to talk over some of the noises that are going to be coming in. But I think it's just one of those pieces. But as a parent, I think it gives that extra layer of perspective in all of it, because you do get to experience that student-centeredness, right? Where it's the, we know from the outside, we know from that educator perspective of this is what is, you know, best practice, this is what is effective. But then we also get to see what that looks like through our kids' eyes and through their lens as well. So I'm curious. I think we'll probably have some conversations as we go through this about, have your kids this year had different experiences than they had last year? Can you talk a little bit into that, of like what your kiddos have been experiencing now versus then?
Yeah, I both of my kids are good students, like diligent. And so they both tried their best to kind of hang in there and participate and do what they needed to do in the spring. But I think there was a lot of just opacity around what are the expectations? And so you're doing all this work, but nothing's being graded because we have a no harm policy. So your grade's not going to move at all. And then, you know, the participation piece and, you know, how do we require kids to participate online? What does that even look like? So I think there was a real focus in their district, but I've seen this all over in the last 6 months on just this survival mode, focus on dissemination and collection, right? I'm disseminating assignments, I'm collecting assignments, I'm doing my job, I'm navigating this really tough moment. And we know that that's not the art of teaching, right? So what I've been excited to see, even though obviously lots of room for growth in this moment for all of us, but I've really seen his teachers begin the year in a much more grounded place, really focusing on building community, engaging student voices, trying to allow them some degree of control over the time, the place, and the pace of some of their work. So unlike some of the horror stories I've been hearing about where kids are trapped on Zoom calls for entire days. They do spend a good chunk of time on Zoom, but it seems to me their teachers are using a range of strategies to engage them, from project-based work to time in collaborative groups and breakout rooms. And I don't hear a lot from my son, but when I go down the hall, my daughter, my kids are in a bilingual public school and immersion. And so she's either, you know, chatting away in Spanish or English. And so I know she's being engaged, and on some level he is too. So, you know, if their experience in a just a traditional public high school in Northern California is any kind of window into what might be kind of more common out there, I do think that this school year, though no teacher would argue they've mastered anything, they do feel at least a little bit like they have more direction.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So you and I worked at this for the same school in the summer in August. And I think it was great for me to get to talk with you and kind of talk about like, what are the commonalities? What are we all going to talk about? And you touched on some of the ones that we really have to address, especially in the beginning, you know, setting the stage, what are the expectations, building community. And of course we went into learning design. As we're starting to see more and more schools kind of shift into either hybrid or things like that, you know, what is the focus of your work now? Assuming that we've got those basics and we're not only building, but maintaining community, what's kind of the focus now? Can you give us some tips on what's been happening?
Yeah, I always share with teachers. Like I'm a big Simon Sinek fan. I'm constantly revisiting my why, and the why that drives my work in this space and has from the beginning is student engagement. And most of the teachers that I'm working with, when we share out, what are the big challenges you're facing? Student engagement, you know, lack of student engagement, lack of student motivation. And yet the same teachers who are frustrated by this, I'm not sure that they're just taking that step back to be that observer and think about these kids and how so many of these kids, be it in class, online, or a blend of the both, they go all day long, all week long sometimes, and they don't get to make a single decision, and how disenfranchising that is as a learner, and the negative impact that lack of choice and voice has on your motivation as a human being, your desire to even want to lean into the learning that's happening. So whether I'm talking about a blended learning model like station rotation or the playlist model, or whether I'm trying to get them to kind of take a more outside the box approach with like a choose your own adventure, which I just blogged about, kind of format, how do we allow kids this agency in the learning happening? Because there's a lot of reasons right now that the COVID, you know, protests around racial injustice, all of these things that are in the background of their lives, creating kind of this just tension, might be taking energy away from things they would normally be putting energy into, like school. And just realizing that in this moment, maybe more than ever before, we have to find ways to put students at the center of this experience and allow them to make key decisions about their learning so that they want to engage. Because quite frankly, there's so much competing for their attention outside of school. I think it's shocking how many are currently engaging.
So I have lots of thoughts and feelings on this for sure, because I think that one of the big things that I've been seeing working with people across the country is exactly what you're saying, that you know, this spring, so much frustration over lack of engagement. That was like such a fear coming into this. And one of the things that I've been trying to, you know, remind ourselves of is exactly what you had said your own kids were experiencing in the spring, was that reminder of, you know, the motivation for many of our students has been grades and has been completion of work in order to get whatever that looks like. And whether or not your school was participating in No Harm or was, you know, continuing with grades, the onslaught of information that was going out about neighboring districts and neighboring states and all of that information brings kids to start to think, well, then why bother, right? And I think, and the reason why I'm pausing on this is because you're also talking about Simon Sinek and the why. And I think that that's one of those things that I've really pushed with educators and with administrators is, even though we might be using the terms student-centered learning and engaged opportunities and all of that, if our why is being demonstrated through taking assessments and, you know, well, you're going to want, you know, behavior driven type ideas around completion or, you know, timeliness or any of those kind of things, that if that is removed, you've taken away that intrinsic motivation for kids to want to learn, right? And it only becomes, I mean, I was a middle school teacher and I can't tell you how many days I had the, you know, the question was, why do we need to know this, miss? Like, why is this important? And if you can't answer that question and it not be because it's on next week's test, then you're never gonna get that engagement back. And so I think that that's been one of those things that has pushed educators a lot this year, is to restructure pace and sequence and to restructure, you know, that intentionality of why we're learning what we're learning and at what point in time, to really bring us into that engagement.
Well, and I would even say, like, I don't think we should be the only ones like put on the spot to define the why of learning. I think one of the big problems that exists, and this is something I explore a lot in my last book, Balance with Blended Learning, is like kids need to learn how to think about their thinking. They need to learn how to identify the why, the purpose, the value. Yes, with guidance, of course. And it's so important for us as educators to model that transparency by highlighting the value of the things that we're doing. But, you know, without engaging students in a really intentional practice of reflecting on their learning, tracking their progress, looking at artifacts of their work and thinking about what does this reflect about my skills as a learner, my growth over time. I think all of those pieces are a really important part of that engagement puzzle as well, because it helps students to understand like, oh, I am developing skills. I am growing as a student. I see why we're doing this. I feel like when we're not good about highlighting the why or explaining the why for kids, and we're not guiding them through that metacognitive skill building, then you get students who assume everything's busy work. And I used to just blanch whenever I heard that. I was like, I do not assign busy work. These are not just assignments I decided like off the cuff would be great to keep you busy. These are things we're doing for a purpose. And I had to take ownership of the fact that I'm clearly not communicating that why very well if you think this is all busy work. And how do we go through the process of both myself spending more time on that, but also you learning how to do that for yourself as a learner?
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I think also is a helpful piece in the engagement motivation thing is thinking about peer-to-peer learning. And I feel like that was something that was probably maybe really the most absent in the spring, is that there was a lot more, if there was interaction, it tended to be pretty teacher to student and there wasn't a lot of peer-to-peer. And so I love the idea of peer assessment, peer feedback. How can we really be that community of inquiry? How can we bring it all together? So we're having those connections with each other and not just with the teacher, because I think that makes it a more authentic experience. And we really feel like we're learning together, and it's not just, Catelyn, I know you would never assign busy work, but it's not just for that. It's all of us learning together for a real purpose. So I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. And I think that's a motivator for kids too. Like, oh, I'm going to get a chat with people my own age. I'm going to get to problem solve, work on projects, like have discussions. I know all of that's really scary for teachers who fear what kids are going to do in a breakout room alone, you know, but I'm like, a lot of creativity and amazing things could happen in that breakout room if we give kids a little space to communicate and collaborate and be creative together.
Yeah. So I just want to take a moment to commend you, Catelyn, because one of the things I've always admired about you is how you have such a clear focus. You have never tried to be a jack of all trades, although you're very good at many, many things. You've stayed very, very focused on what really spoke to you and your why and the blended learning and online learning. And I just really want to say thank you, because one of the things is, not only have you just been so clear to yourself with that, but the way that you share your work, I struggle to think of someone more generous in putting things out there. You're never like, hey, go buy my book. You share things. And then, you know, I do happen to have a book, but you've never come across that way. And so you've written how many books now? Is it four or is it more?
Five.
Okay. Yeah. I can't keep track.
Five. Oh my gosh. No, I know, I'm a terrible salesperson. I never worked at the mall. I'm like the person who goes in the store and they start creeping to ask you if you need help. And I'm like, leave me alone. Don't sell me anything.
But I think that you're so genuine and just wanting to help teachers. Like, once they see the work that you're putting out there, we all want more. So we go buy the book anyways. I don't think you need to be a salesperson. And I think it just, you sell, your work sells itself. So kudos on that. I just want to acknowledge that because there's a lot of people stepping into the blended and online learning space right now, obviously because of COVID, and welcome. We're so happy you're here. But I do want to honor those who've been there for a very long time, in some cases from the beginning. And so online learning is too old for you to have been from that very beginning. Catlin, you're very young, and so I won't put that on you, but many years you have been involved in the space. So thank you for that. Yeah. And I wanted to kind of ask you, what do you see as the next thing that we're going to be looking at? Because we're talking about engagement. We talked about, you know, getting through the setting the stage, the, you know, expectations, the building and maintaining community, talking about engagement. Do you have any, and I don't usually edit, but if you don't want to answer this, I can cut it out. But do you have any like predictions as to what the next thing is going to be? Because we are starting to face this transition of more people going into the hybrid. And I know you and I have kind of talked about the concurrent, which is not our ideal, but I have to say what you've put out there and what I've seen teachers do is quite magical. And the innovation is really inspiring to me. That's not a model we had in blended learning before this. So.
Well, and you can do the concurrent classroom and it's not blended learning. You know what I mean? So when I first started writing about it, and I was very clear. And even when I work with teachers now, because now I've written about it and schools are like, oh, we're doing that. Will you help? And I'm just like, I don't like this. This isn't grounded in research. It's not grounded in best practices. I don't personally think it's what's best for teachers or students. Honestly, I think it's a really tough juggle. So when I was trying to wrap my mind around how do I help teachers just navigate this moment, I immediately started with blended learning models. So I was like, there's just no way I see this being a really dynamic, engaging experience, whole group, if the teacher feels trapped in front of a screen at the front of the room, like leading a lesson. I feel like what will end up happening is they revert to a lot of teacher talk, and then there's a lot of pen and paper or digital worksheet kind of practice, you know, and I wanted to avoid that. So I was thinking about how do we leverage these models that have kids in small group or allow them to self-pace or have their own path and then really focus on the teacher work being value added, right? So teacher working with small group or teacher pulling individual students. But what was fascinating, and I think a lot of people, that blog was helpful. It talked about the, you know, the blended learning models and how to use them for that kind of scenario. But then I was working with teachers who were just like, Catlin, I don't know blended learning. I don't know the models well enough to do this. Like, I just need a basic, how could I approach the design? And that's really, so then I kind of took a step back and I was like, okay, if we just take some basic strategies that most teachers are comfortable using regardless of the situation, and then adapt them for this moment and think about what considerations need to happen for the concurrent classroom, maybe that's a first step for those folks who aren't comfortable with blended learning. But yeah, I just worry about the enormous toll it's putting on both teachers and students to try to navigate like keeping kids engaged in these two learning landscapes, especially when so many districts are requiring that kids be on the Zoom call in person for X amount of time. And I'm like, there are benefits to online learning, but if we trap kids in Zoom calls for hours each day, then they don't get that flexibility. They don't get the agency and the autonomy that's often associated with online learning, which I think is too bad.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that of the, you know, so often when we look at online learning, it's been something that has been self-selected, right? Like it's what works really, really well for our circumstances. You know, we know that the vastly asynchronous type situations work better for older learners because they're able to manage that a little bit better. That doesn't mean that you can't craft an online situation for younger learners. It just means it needs to be done in a different way, much like a senior English class needs to be done differently than kindergarten time. And so I think that it's one of those conversations that's really worth having, but it's also so very difficult. And I appreciate like where you're at in this, because dealing with such varying comfort levels, I guess I'm going to try to say it that way. So then, because some people are just very, very nervous coming into it, you know, their background in technology and in these devices is much more limited than others. And so I think that it is this like need that everybody has right now that is very stressful, that creates this perfect storm of situation that then unfortunately sometimes lends itself to be this, well, we're just going to make do with what we can right now, and then we'll pick it back up once the world settles down again. And that's kind of a misstep as well. How about you on that? Because I keep saying that we are seeing that, yes, there may, you know, things are going to settle down and things like that, but we are also reaching that turning point where our quote unquote normal is not going to be something that we're going to return to. I mean, if businesses are any kind of indicator of the transitions that are happening, I think we're going to see some pretty significant transitions in education as well.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, ultimately we have to get to a place where hopefully learning isn't interrupted every time something happens, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's a extreme weather event or whatever. Like, how do we keep kids learning? How do we keep that continuity? And so, I mean, I hope that teachers, and I keep saying, nobody's mastered this right now, right? Like, we're all learning. You're a leader, you're a teacher, you're a parent, you're a student, you're learning right now. So as uncomfortable and stressful as it is, if we can just embrace this moment as, okay, growing is sometimes hard. There are growing pains for a reason, but I'm going to dedicate myself to experimenting and knowing I'm going to fail, but then just learning from those failures and keep pushing forward. Then my hope is, one, it'll be a lot less scary for kids to fail. Because if we as educators, like, hey, we're trying something new, I have no idea how this is going to go. But you know what? If it's a total flop, we'll figure out how to make it better. Then I think when kids aren't sure, when they fail, it's like, okay, this happens. This is part of the learning process. And then the silver lining, I hope, after all this craziness is that teachers will have done some stretching and some growing and picked up some tools and some strategies and some models that they can add to their teaching tool belts moving forward that just makes them feel more confident and nimble in this practice. Because there's a lot of people who came into COVID where they had one model, teacher-led, whole group, minimal technology. And so this is a big learning curve, but how great if a good chunk of those teachers leave this really tough situation feeling more confident using a learning management system, engaging kids in online discussions, teaching them how to collaborate and share digital spaces. Like, those will be really helpful moving forward.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a silver lining that Bree and I have been hoping for, is that no one asked this, but time and time again, whether it's on the podcast or just teachers or principals that we're coaching, they're saying, like, well, I wouldn't have done this before, but now I won't go back. Like, I can't, like, this would have never been something that was on my radar, but now this is how it's going to be. And I would not go back to exactly how I had done it before.
Yeah.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and just ask you, you have a podcast called The Balance. Did I get that exactly correct?
You did.
So that is an interesting word. And so I'm just kind of curious. And by the way, for those of you that are not watching this, Catelyn gives really good facial expressions.
Oh my God.
Maybe come back to later when Bree said the word grading, because you gave a really good facial expression for that one.
I have a lot of feelings about grading.
I know, it's a triggering word, right? but one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, and I worry about, and I want to bring this up because you said you're worried about teachers, whether it's the concurrent sessions or whatever it is. And I have a lot of worries for teachers because there is such a thing as compassion fatigue and secondary trauma. And we're seeing teachers having to watch what's happening at home, whether it's something that we're really worried about, like a very small child being left alone at home because mom and dad have to go to work. Or just things that really we know are probably not ideal for them. But it's like we're kind of taking that on as teachers. And then, you know, the three of us are more in a coaching leadership role. And so we're helping the teachers. And I've had a lot of compassion fatigue, not because I don't want to help, but it's a little bit stressful for me because, I mean, Bree and I were working with some folks last week, and it was hard. The stories we were hearing these teachers tell us, like, I hung up from that call and I was like, I need a bottle of wine, not a glass of wine. I want a bottle. There's a GIF out there that would represent it. It's a giant cup that I'm pouring over my head because I feel so bad for them. And so I'm going to land this plane. There is a question coming. Because you are making a public effort to be balanced, how are you handling all of this? Like, what the working full time, two kids at home learning, and being a support for so many people out there. How are you managing to balance this? And maybe you're not, but
I mean, full disclosure, the balance began because, well, I wrote Balance with Blended Learning. So balance has been on my mind, but very much because I don't have it figured out, right? I am a type A. I take on way too much. I do kind of plow forward with all these different projects. Luckily, I have a very patient husband who's very helpful. He's a teacher. And so he's teaching from home now too. And at least I have somebody who I can share that juggle with of balancing my kids' school with my work. But yeah, I don't have it figured out. Every time I have a guest on the balance, I do feel like I've learned something, like a takeaway, a strategy. Then like, okay, I need to do a better job of taking care of me because I tend to take care of everybody else first. And like you guys, I coach teachers and I hear their stories and my heart breaks for them, or I'll bust my butt and like, you know, do a whole blog with resources and templates. And then somebody's like, but what does this look like in a kindergarten and first grade class? And I'm like, oh, I love you, but like, I can't do grade level specific on every blog, you know? So just always, there's always more that is wanted than, you know, we really have hours for in the day. So I think for me, exercise has been my absolute go-to. I don't know how I'd be navigating this moment without my crazy walks with my dog and my time on my rower in my gym, in my garage. For me, that's huge. And then I think also just really carving out that family time in the evenings. You know, we always have dinner together and the kids share about their virtual day at the dinner table. So it's still like hearing about their days, but it's just a tough situation to like live and work in your home. I mean, you guys see my office. Here's me touching the walls of my office.
It is lovely though, for those who are not watching, I do want to point out it is styled extremely well. And so,
but it's very small. It's like a cubby and I'm here all day, every day. So yeah, it's tricky.
It's hard. Well, I love that you bring up the exercise. I once heard someone say like, if their kids are really struggling, like, what do you do? And there's like questions they ask their kid. Have you exercised? Have you been of service to someone else? Have you practiced gratitude? And so I think there are these things that we can do to try and cope, but I do think we still have to like maybe grieve or just acknowledge what's going on, because I also want to avoid that toxic positivity that people have just started chatting about. I'm like you, Catelyn, and I think Bree is too. We like to power through. And honestly, when I'm busy, that's usually when I'm actually the least stressed, because I just want to keep moving. Like, I don't want to sit too long and think about it. I'll be exercising or things like that, but I don't want to sit too long. I don't know. Bree, what do you think?
Yeah, I think to me, I think one of the biggest problems with the toxic positivity that people are talking about is that I internalize that as if it is like you're doing a great job all the time, but you're never giving that support, right? Like it's just, you're having somebody who's coming in that's like, you can do this, really tell me how. And then if you can't provide a solution of some sort or some kind of support system into that, I think that's where the weight just gets so heavy. Because, you know, that there, and not everybody's going to know the right answer, but at the same time, like in my many lives, right? Like all of us have many, many lives. And when somebody comes to you and they're like, tell me what I can do to help. And you're like, well, can you do that? Well, no, I can't do that. Well, can you do that? Well, no, I can't do that. Okay. Well then I'm just going to keep doing the 75 things because, you know, and it is frustrating in that way. And so I think that that's really important. And I'm laughing because Lainey was, we were having a little chat before, Catelyn. And if you haven't listened to the podcast, you might not have heard the part where I have Lainey calls it an aversion. It's not an aversion, but to the word balance. And specifically when we talk about work-life balance and things like that. And I say, because the issue for me is that it conjures up this perfect balance situation, right? Like everything's equal and I said this with Lainey where I was like, and you as well, like we have two kids, like there's never going to be where you're going to give equally to everyone in this situation. And so to me, the word that I choose that makes more sense to me is centeredness, because you can find a very strong center. And if you're centered in your why and you're centered in all of that, then like you can be knocked off balance, but you still have a center that keeps you from falling over. And I think that that's like what I try to cling to is just, there's going to be days when I'm going to completely get like, you know, I'm going to put my hands back and I'm going to catch myself because I was that knocked off balance, but I'm going to pop back up because I know that I can get through these next things because of that why and all of those pieces. Because I think like I felt continually, and I still feel every single day, I don't think any of us, if we're being truly honest with each other or with ourselves, ever feel like we have any of it figured out, right? But it was this like real fear of mine that I was not giving enough. And I think especially as working moms, like we hear this a lot from lots of different pieces in there. And it was just that moment of like, I don't love my work more than I love my kids. I don't love my kids more than I love my, like it is a different circumstance and a different situation. And a lot of my work comes from my passion for my kids, because I get to see how my kids are impacted by these changes in learning. And so it fuels each other. And so anyway, it's like, it's just a little aside on all of that, but I think it's really interesting to keep that in mind, that no one has it all figured out. And I love that you shared that. That was honestly the very first call that I made to Lainey, where I was like, we're supposed to be really good at this. We're supposed to have this figured out. Like we tell people how to do this and it's so stressful for me, like in my own house. Can I even continue working if I can't figure this out, if, you know, through all of those circumstances?
Well, and you're not the only one who has like pointed out balance. Somebody on Twitter was like, balance is unachievable. I'm striving for some harmony. And then I just recorded a podcast with Ivy Yule Eldridge, who's a great friend of mine. And she said, it's a total like lie. She's a different phrasing. It was much more eloquent, but like this balance, because I picture the scales in my mind and, you know, how I'm allocating my time. And she broke it down. She's this really great comparison. She's like, imagine, you know, you've got 100%, and we talked about how we both try to function using closer to like 1,000% metric, which is not real. But you have 100%, it's a pie. So you're dividing up that pie. And it wasn't even about that there should be equal slices to different parts of your life. But in any given moment, thinking about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and making the intentional choice to dedicate that portion of your pie in this moment to this thing over here, right? So when I was in my doctoral program, my kids' slice of pie was smaller. And there were times when I gave myself a really hard time about that and was really hard on myself. And then there are times when I was like, no, this is something that's important to me that I've dreamed about doing. They're seeing me be a learner in this moment. There's value in that. And so it wasn't really about a perfect balance on a scale. It was about being intentional about our choices and being free to say no to certain things and decide how we divide up our pie. And for me, that was just such a great, like, okay, that makes a lot more sense than trying to have it be this even split. Because like you said, it will never be an even split.
I love that. I mean, and it mirrors so much what you were talking about of the modeling as a teacher, the failure opportunity, right? Like that was one of those things that I have said over and over again. My mom was a working mom. I am a working mom. Like I cannot imagine not modeling that for both of my kids. And I mean, there's Harvard research from, you know, anecdotes that show that women are more successful when they are, you know, daughters of working moms, and that men are more culturally and socially successful when they are sons of working moms. And so I think that it's one of those pieces where, you know, I don't want to tell my daughter, hey, you can go and be anything that you want to be until you have kids. And then you need to like put all of that on the back burner. Like I want her to see, like, these are all the different things that I am doing in order to make it work. And you can do hard things too. And it's gonna, you know, it is gonna be hard. It's gonna be a season of hard. And then we're gonna have, you know, some opportunity that comes out from it. So I appreciate that so, so much of you sharing that, just because again, like Lainey and I were talking about, there's, I'm going to include you again in this of we get put in this situation of like, oh, well, you know, all of this. And so it must be easier for you, or you've got it all figured out. And what about those of us who don't? And it's like, well, I mean, we might know the research. We might know, you know, the practice and the theory and all of that really, really well, but that doesn't mean we have it figured out, right? Like it means that we're we have more to pull from to kind of bounce some ideas off, but every situation is going to be different and we're always going to be learning how to handle it best.
I will just be fully honest that I think I am a pretty good teacher to every child in the world except my own children.
Oh, right there with you.
And I'm going to say there's maybe some ego involved that like my children are an extension of me. And when it's not working out, which both of my kids work very hard in school, I'm very proud of them. But those moments when it's not working out, like that's me failing. And so there's so much emotion wrapped up in helping my own kids. It's not my best moment. Like I think this is why, yes, I need them in school. I need them with an actual teacher that is not blood relative. Like this is where this needs to go. And so I've been very honest on this podcast that if I have portrayed anything misleading on social media, like I have it figured out, like I could do homeschooling tomorrow. That is not true. I could not do homeschooling.
Oh my gosh. Somebody said, do you think that people are just going to want to homeschool their kids right after this? And I was like, no. I would do is pick up homeschooling after this experience. Like teachers they're amazing humans, and they deserve to be valued in this society in a way that we quite frankly don't. And if people are spending days, months, weeks, half a year at home with their kids dealing with the homeschool end of things, like I don't know who's trying to sign up for this.
No, God bless you, homeschool teachers. I bow to you. You are amazing. I am not you. I don't know
how they do it.
I don't either. And then, you know, one thing that you mentioned a silver lining earlier. Yes, I help people walk away with some new tools, some new strategies. Another potential silver lining, I remember I was working with a group of administrators. They were very great, great group, very positive. And one administrator raised his hand and he said, you know what, Lainey? We do a lot right in education. Everyone's always telling us what we're doing wrong, but we do a lot right. And I thought of that. That was actually a few years ago that was brought up. And I think of it often, but I've really been thinking about it lately because we are always looking to improve education, but it is worth taking a moment to pause and say, okay, well, what do we really do well? Because when we do get that opportunity to go back to more options, right now we're limited in options. What do we want to make sure we honor and go back to? And what do we go, you know what? We actually did that better when we did it the way that we had to during COVID. So I think I love the silver linings. Any other silver linings that you're seeing?
I mean, I think the thing that's tough for me, so I'm seeing this a little, but my own research is on teacher engagement in blended learning courses. And it was really fascinating to see the aspects of teachers' work in a blended context that positively impact their engagement. And one of the big drivers was their relationships with students. And in this moment, what I'm seeing that's hard is just the teachers who are so good at those relationships in person and are right now scrambling to get through content and figure out this online space. And they know that they're not connecting with kids in the ways that feeds them on a much deeper level as an educator. And so that's hard. And one of the areas that I've spent a lot of time working on when I coach teachers is how do we create these spaces, this time, use different models to still allow for that connection with learners, whether it is building in, you know, time to pull a kid into a breakout room and give 3 minutes of feedback on work, or have a quick 5-minute conference chat about their progress, because the teachers who are having success in finding avenues to make that happen and connect with kids, they're the ones who, when we talk about what's happening, it's hard, but they're like, but I'm still effective. I'm still connecting with these kids. I'm still seeing progress. So, you know, I hope that a silver lining from this is really leveraging technology for that connectivity that's so important for relationship building between the teacher and the student, but also obviously among the learners as well.
Yeah. And I love that you point out the rethinking of time. And one thing I'm encouraging teachers to rethink as far as time right now, and you mentioned it, is that using that synchronous time for feedback. Because one thing I worry about when we're pulling our teachers, we're asking them to do 2 full-time jobs. We're asking them to be online curriculum designers and online teachers. And those are actually separate things that they're being asked to do simultaneously, which is bananas. But you mentioned it is like using that synchronous time for feedback, because you need to try and fit that into your synchronous, or you are going to burn out spending. And I know a lot of people are already burned out, but you're going to be nights and weekends, or you're not going to be giving feedback. So it has to happen.
Yeah. And I think if we think about that student experience on the other side of a screen, getting focused, regular feedback you can act on, that is how you feel seen and supported as a student online without feedback. And I have experienced this as an adult learner, right? I was in a blended program. So I went down 2 weeks each semester for my face-to-face classes. And then it was online with synchronous and asynchronous work. And I had a handful of professors who I never got any feedback on anything. And I was like, are you seeing anything I'm doing? I don't even know if I'm doing this right. And I'm a total nerdy learner. Like, I'm like, give me feedback. Tell me how I can improve. And so I know not every student is like that, but that has to be, I think, when we talk about the teacher's roles in a blended or online learning scenario, yes, you are an instructor. Yes, you have some degree of subject area expertise, but that is not your only role. You are a designer of learning experiences. You are a facilitator of learning. Like, and I think it's that facilitation piece that often gets neglected in this moment where we're not sure, or teachers aren't sure, how do I embrace that role as a coach, supporting students as they're working to make sure they know how to continue improving, whether it's real-time feedback, whether it's grade conversations, whether it's conferencing sessions. And quite frankly, a lot of that transfer of information that we're dedicating all this time to, like, put it in a video, right? Or figure out a different way for kids to explore and poke around and learn these things. Because if you're talking at kids for more than 10 or 15 minutes, like, I just feel like that's a waste of the precious time we have with learners right now.
For sure. For sure. I think that that's one of those pieces where, you know, we, again, focus on, I think that it's important because yes, this is very, very, very difficult work, and it's not minimizing this at all. And I know it's our inclination to kind of not focus on the really hard things sometimes because it's an easier way to get through it. But I also find with teachers, one of the things that is powerful in this moment is to not think about the things that are going really, really well, because if they're going really well, then that means keep them that way, right? Like, right. Think about the things that aren't going really well. If it's engagement, what is it about engagement, right? Like, and it was, you know, likely some of the very same things that you saw in a face-to-face classroom too. And so, you know, if you can pinpoint some of those and then find, you know, a resource or a tool suggestion or, you know, whatever it might be. But again, like, getting very clear and focused on what that pain point is will then give you an idea around it instead of searching for online ways to teach science. And, you know, you're going to get inundated with all of these differing things that are just going to leave you completely and totally spent and overwhelmed because there's no way that you're going to be able to do all of them. And you're not going to think that they're going to apply to you. But instead, if you can see, like, you know, online labs for, you know, Newton's laws, that's might get you a little bit closer if you're seeing that that's something that that has been a struggle for you, you know. And I think, again, it's just seeing that there are pieces that we want to hold on to. We want to keep them moving forward with that. We want to see it again down the road, but there are things that we don't want to see. And they were problems in a face-to-face environment. There are problems in a one-to-one environment, and then they're going to be problems in an online environment as well.
Mm-hmm. We want to make that shift from compliance to motivation. That's a theme I've heard a lot.
Oh, compliance, my least favorite word used in education right there.
Well, I think if we look back and to Bree's point about if it's a problem now, it's probably a problem before. What we've been measuring before has been seat time, you know, as our friend Tom Murray says, the wrong end. And so that's not really telling us. And so, again, we are probably seeing motivation issues that weren't there before, but we've had compliance systems that maybe kind of hid that from us. And so, so Kellen, I want to honor your time. Bree and I are so grateful for you being here. So I want to start to wrap up because you've got like a million things to do and we are truly blessed that you gave us this amount of time. I want to make sure people know to go to your blog, get your books, listen to your podcast. You are seriously, I'm not just saying that because you're on here. You're one of the most generous content creators out there. Thank you for all you share.
I love it. Design is like my favorite. So I am just thrilled to be able to put that love to work to support teachers right now, because I do know every little bit in terms of time savings helps.
We're going to put your Twitter, I'm going to let you talk, Bree, but we're going to put your Twitter hashtag here on the frame that we'll have around this. And we're also in the show notes. We're going to put all of the places that you want people to connect with you. You've got, like I said, a great website. You've got tons of content out there. We'll list all that in the show notes. You guys check Catlin out. You probably already know. You're probably listening to Lemonade Learning for the first time because we have Catlin Tucker on. So, so Bree, anything you want to add before we let Catlin go?
No, I could sit here and geek out all day long and we could just have like the nerdiest of conversations. And I just thank you so much. I mean, as somebody who has followed your work, both when I was in the classroom, out of the classroom and continue, I mean, it's just so important. And I think it's one of those things where we know, especially the three of us that have been in this for a long time, like we know how much technology is impacting the world, and it's impacting learning, and it has been in the classroom before, and there's really not any tools or any platforms that are available now that weren't available this time last year. I mean, really and truly. And I think the biggest piece is learning, like you've said, like how do we most appropriately engage with it and utilize these forces for good and make sure that we're really learning about the capabilities and the capacity. And so I just want to say a great big huge thanks to you for kind of championing that that flag and that banner for so long, and for those of us who continue to look at you as a beacon of what we need to be doing. Just great big thanks. So
thanks you guys. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you, Catlin. Have a great rest of your day. I would ask you what you have going on, but I feel like I know, and it's a lot. And so good luck with that.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Catlin. Thanks for listening, everyone.